Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. We have a really good one today. We actually have guests from like two of my favorite podcasts in the world, one based in the US and one based in Italy. So to talk about Milan, we have our great friend, Dan Mays, Daniele Mazzanti from Vox2Box. Fun chat on Milan as we enter the final stretch run of the season. And then we really wanted to give some legit praise to both Mourinho and Tammy Abraham. So I asked my friend Steve Cerruti, who works over at The Ringer, to come on to pod. Ironically, he was recording with my idol Bill Simmons right before he was recording with me. So I think you'll enjoy that interview at the end, talking about Roma. And of course, with Serie A coming up this weekend, we have 1,000 names on deck with his predictions. But at the top, I'm very excited to be reunited with my dear friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. We have a lot to get to. We have some transfer rumors involving one player that I adore and one that's been in Alex's doghouse in a while. But one of the themes, too, that you'll hear in the pod is us talking a lot about the young strikers in Serie A. So Vlahovic, Lautaro, Tammy, and Osimhen, this has been a theme of the pod. We've been ranking them, talking about their season since last fall. So Alex, what I figured I'd ask you is, instead of ranking them, I'm curious to see, out of these four, whose opinion has on which of the player your opinion has changed the most since the start of the season between Vlahovic, Lautaro, Tammy, and Osimhen?
That's a great question, because that means it can go either direction. So Vlahovic, before the season, on my radar, obviously, but yeah, it's changed a lot since the beginning of the season. Because, put it this way, if you said, Alex, just take a blank team that needs a striker, list me the strikers that they should go for around Europe that might be 25 or younger, say, eventually I probably list him, right? But he's not going to be one of these names that just immediately I write down. I'm probably writing him down with the Osimhens and the Tammys and a Jonathan David from Lille, and, well, obviously Holland, but that one is, you know, for everyone. So he's just part of a group there and not at all a front runner. And now I have, what, said on the most recent episode we did that I don't think Vlahovic is just a good Serie A striker. I think he's a striker that could do well in a lot of leagues. So that's changed a lot, definitely. Tammy, that's a tough one, right? Because I've always rated him. I've always been aware of maybe his inefficiencies or what he needs to work on. Like, he's a really tall guy, but he's got to get so much better at his heading accuracy. He should be scoring a lot more headed goals. I always think there are aspects of the build-up play he needs to work on, for sure. I think his biggest strength is just goal scoring. So, and I know that sounds so simple, but, like, you know what I mean. He just, right place, right time. He's a decent poacher. He can also have a decent strike on him. He's super motivated, so he just gets himself into those situations a lot. And I would say, David, he's just done that a lot this year again. So I don't know if my opinion's majorly changed on Tammy. If it has, it's for the better, obviously. It's like, oh, wow, okay. Like, you know, he did not let the whole Tuchel thing affect him. He's really just continued on with his career and improving. Osimhen, I'm not sure it's changed a lot, because, David, you know, I really liked him, and as did you, but I really liked him last season. I liked him coming from Ligue 1. I really did. So, yeah, I don't know if it's changed that much. Lautaro, if anything, David, I feel like it's gone the other way, and I know he's still a good player. I know he still had big games. Like, I know he's someone that would still command a nice transfer fee, not astronomical, but a nice one for sure. But if anything, I was kind of expecting him to really bomb forward even more. But let's argue against that. He lost his partner in crime, Lukaku. So that's an adjustment. So you know what? Through just talking about this out loud, I would say it's changed just a little bit on Tammy for the better. A little bit on Osimhen for the better. Because I would say, once again, he's done really well. I know he had the big injury, but he certainly hasn't reverted from what I thought of him. He's just confirmed it and moved forward. Like, he's definitely someone I think top teams around Europe should look at for sure. And then with Lautaro, like, by no means do I think he's a bad player, but maybe it's gone a little down, just a little down, because I think that's super, super great youngsters, even if they do lose a Lukaku, if they're just meant to be a star striker, they just continue on being a star striker. And I know Lautaro's not like an out-and-out striker. I get that and everything. So I'm really not saying it's really changed all that much on Lautaro, but if anything, maybe a skosh back a point. Vlahovic, I think it's changed the most, David. Like I said, I asked you in the middle of the season, hey, David, you know, I've heard some skeptics say that, all right, he's good in Serie A, but, you know, he's one of these guys that's just a classic, I'm going to succeed in Serie A, but nowhere else. And you shot that down, and Napoli Outsider shot that down. And then, you know, I watched him a lot more. And certainly, I know he's had some off games for Juve, but he's also had some really good games for Juve. And, you know, I just more look at his game, and I can see aspects that would succeed in any league. So, yeah, I think I've changed my mind most on Vlahovic, as I kind of did live time process of elimination there. David, what about you?
Yeah, I liked the way you went about it. So I'm going to kind of go through a similar exercise. You know what? I'm going to start with Lautaro, because I think you do make a very good point. He had to adjust. Him and Lukaku really were a great duo. And look, they're... I think you could argue in two ways that you could say that Zeko is a great striker to play with because he's kind of like this offensive playmaker who opens space. But then Zeko has also played pretty often as like the single striker with like wingers around him, and that seems to have worked well. But what I'll say is that I think most people would kind of rate this as a down season for Lautaro, but he's still sitting at 15 Serie A goals right now. So say even he finishes the season with that total, that's not a particularly bad season by any stretch. So if it's the worst season, 15 goals, and he's had some big moments, that Coppa Italia game against Milan just being the last one, I would say Lautaro, my opinion, has stayed about even. And as tempted as I was to maybe downgrade him a little bit, I think the fact that he has 15 says a lot. And again, he won him that game against Milan in the Coppa Italia. We've always pointed out that Lautaro, outside of Serie A playing for Argentina, has a much better track record than a lot of other big name strikers like Dybala, Higuain. Not sure about how Aguero's track record in Argentina, but certainly Dybala, Higuain, he's done better there. So I think Lautaro, very good striker. Can he be the main striker on like a top team? No, I don't think he can. But I think he can be a great complementary piece, and he's been on a team that's been very successful. Vlahovic, look, going into the season, you know, Napoli Outsider was huge on him. Even our friend Guardaline, Enrico Passarella, was very high on him. He finished the calendar year 2021 by tying Ronaldo for the most goals in a calendar year in the history of Serie A, which I think is very impressive. And sure, you can point penalties, tap-ins, whatnot, but he did half of that year playing on a team that was battling to avoid relegation. Since he's been at Juve, there's been a lot of prisoner of the moment takes, but he's played 15 games, scored 7 goals. I think that's fine. Is it superb? No. Is it terrible? No, not by any means. I think he's been fine, but he's had to adapt to go from Italiano in the second half of last year, very offensive style, to Allegri style, which obviously is very different. So overall, yeah, I think Vlahovic, my opinion of him has certainly gone up. And I think, you know, scoring at Fiorentina is one thing, scoring at Juve is a whole other thing. And, you know, again, 7 goals, 15 matches, and I think he's made an impact. Look at it this way. He looks much closer to Chiesa's transfer to Juve than Bernardeschi, both came from Fiorentina. So I agree. Without a doubt, Vlahovic's opinion went up. Osimhen, he's had a good season. I would say the biggest complaint you could have on Osimhen is he hasn't scored in the big matches when Napoli really needed to beat a rival. When Napoli hosted Milan at home, I thought he played well, but he didn't score. I was going through the teams he scored this season. It was a lot of mid-lower table teams, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think it's very important to get those points, but we've talked about Napoli, how they were kind of missing this killer instinct and really getting over the hump. So I would say if you wanted to have one complaint on Osimhen is that. I was sky high on him going into the season. I thought that by the end of the season, he would be the most valuable player in Serie A on the transfer market. And look, he could very well still be with this season, but I'm not going to say that my opinion went down, but I was expecting it to go up a little bit more. And then we have to close on Tammy. Obviously, Alex, you followed him much closer than I. You knew him much better than I. But I went to the one game I went at Stamford Bridge, and it was a game that Chelsea didn't win. He was awesome. I was so impressed with him. There are some things that I think you do appreciate more in person. And that was the one guy that stood out to me. To your boy Reese, the wing back. Those were the two guys that I was like, wow, Alex is right about these two. And I think Tammy's been sensational at Roma. Was very unlucky the first half of the season, and now he's dominating. So I'm going to say that when we started ranking these strikers, if you remember, we started doing this, I think, in October. And originally, it was really Lautaro, Simon, Vlahovic. And I threw in Tammy, A, because of the Premier League thing and out of respect for him. And now, since then, if I had to rank them, Tammy would really be up there. So I'm going to go Tammy, but I think I can totally get, because you had much more exposure to him than I had with Vlahovic. So I can see why we got to those answers. Always curious to hear our listeners. Give us your takes. Reply on Twitter. Very curious to see, A, how you rank them, and I'd be curious to know which of them your opinions changed the most on. Let's move on. There's been some interesting transfer rumors.
Speaking of opinions changing, David, on this segue.
That's perfect segue. Perfect segue, because you texted me this, and I was going to put it on the rundown because I was very interested about this. And there was these rumors of Lukaku potentially returning to Serie A, returning to the city of Milano, but not to Inter, to Milan with the potential ownership change. So give us your thoughts on this one, Alex.
Yeah, well, obviously, as a Chelsea fan, but someone who does this podcast, that was extra interesting because we only ever talk, and really the whole world only ever talks about Lukaku if he returns to Serie A, returning to the other Milan, of course, Inter. But then I thought, this is football. This is sports. If there's an appetite for it at AC Milan, if Lukaku above all just wants to go back to Milan, you know, go back to Serie A, but just go back to the city. And of course, if he knows that there have been so many players who have played for both clubs, let's be real, I also feel like he's just going to prioritize then himself and going to the best destination where he can be a great player again. So I started to rationalize again. I'm not saying, by the way, going back to Inter won't help him. I'm sure he would do great there. But we know Zlatan, Giroud, old players. I know Dzeko is an old player as well. I'm just saying I think he probably would want to keep his options open. That's maybe my larger point by that. So if he loves the city of Milan, and then, of course, he just knows that he can do well in Serie A, I'm not sure Lukaku is going to be this loyal, loyal guy. I know his connection with Inter was pretty special. Like pretty, pretty special. So I get that. But I have learned a lot about his loyalties this season, haven't I? And I've also, you know, been totally wrong on who was this guy ahead of time versus who he is now. So, yeah, hey, maybe he just loves Inter even on a deeper level than Chelsea. But I don't think there is loyalty in sports. And I also don't think Lukaku is necessarily the one to live out maybe the exception of having loyalty in sports. So, of course, the rumor, you know, the article from Nazar Kinsella, who's mainly just a Chelsea guy, but decent, you know, so if he tweets it, like he's heard something that there could be a chance of it, right? An appetite at both ends, you know, nothing more, nothing less. But okay, like if there's an appetite for it from AC Milan's perspective, I also would get that just quickly. They know the guy could succeed in the league. And, you know, I'm not saying he's a blend of Zlatan or Giroud, you know, of them together, but I could definitely see them still wanting to kind of have a senior head in at striker. I do think at this point, and maybe I'm just being in the moment and I'm being really unfair, but I do think Giroud is definitely a better lead by example guy than Lukaku these days, and Zlatan might be in a way as well. As we know, out of the three, Lukaku's the one who lets his body just go haywire the quickest, for sure. I mean, Giroud always keeps himself in tip-top shape, and so does Zlatan. And with Lukaku, we have a bit of the Eden Hazard problem, where, oh, wow, physical... Well, I'm not saying Eden was ever a physical specimen, but, you know, really fit one day, and then the next day, especially if things aren't going their way, completely unfit. So... overall, though, I can see it from AC Milan's perspective. Also, just a piss-off Inter. So I can see it from all perspectives. I think, David, that's when you take something seriously, right? I'm not going to overtake it, you know, now and really run with it and start picturing him in a kit. But when you can see it from a Chelsea perspective, obviously, just, hey, we're trying to get rid of the guy, right? When you can see it from a Lukaku perspective of, I know the city, I like the city, I know the league, I like the league, and loyalty is dead in sports. And you can see it from an AC Milan perspective of, hey, we would like a proven goal scorer in the league, and we also, you know, have some older guys on their way out. When you can at least see it from all three parties' perspective, I think that's when you give it some time, like we have here right on the podcast. So it's obviously just an interesting one to think about, and probably even more so for you and true, true Serie A heads, because then you kind of think about the rivalry and what it would mean to Inter fans. So that's my take on it. Like, I can see it. I can see it, but obviously we're in the early stages. What about you?
Yeah, so I'm going to just add a couple of points to what you said, because I think I agree with everything you said. So I would add that Milan and Chelsea have an excellent relationship. We know the Tomori deal, even with the Giroud deal, Milan, you know, although he had that expiring contract. So there's a great relationship, but that's Chelsea's being sold. Milan's being sold. So I would say there's also a lot of projection on what could possibly happen. And I think part of Lukaku being linked to Milan is all of a sudden you hear that Milan could have very rich owners who probably want to make a big splash if they buy the team. And look, Milan's offense really needs an upgrade. Giroud and Ibrahimovic are really old. They do need a younger number nine to fill in. So that makes perfect sense there. The other reasons, obviously, we know Lukaku wants to go back to Italy, loves the city of Milan. Now, on one hand, you know, last summer, I believed him when he said he wanted to stay at Inter because of his huge connections to the club. We saw what that happened. And then you remember, of course, that interview last December when he made all those statements on Inter. So could he once again go against what he said and be like, oh, I love Inter, and then given the opportunity to go to Milan? I could see that. I wouldn't put it past him at all. I'm with you. There's no loyalty in sports. His agent works more with Inter, but he works with both teams. So, yeah, I mean, it's not, I wouldn't dismiss it outright. I do think it's a little bit of projection with the two ownership of the clubs potentially changing. The other thing is we know Milan are really close to signing Origi on a Bosman. I don't think he's enough to upgrade their offense. You know, if that's it, they need to do more. But again, that really changes depending on what happens with Milan's ownership. Like if the deal goes through and you have new owners that want to spend a lot of money, then yeah, I think the odds of them going for Lukaku would increase. And man, that would be really something to see Lukaku on a Milan jersey. I might have to write my next column just to try to imagine what the press conference would be like if that happens. I think that would be a pretty fun exercise. So yeah, I'm like with you. I'm like, I think it's very early. I'm not going to dismiss it. All right, let's see what happens with the ownership changes at both clubs. And then at that point, I think we can assess if there's more of a chance of it happening or not.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. So we'll stick this one in the back of our head. But David, to segue now here in the top episode, I saw this on Twitter last night, and I'm glad you put it in the agenda here, the rundown. You know, I don't often think of the MLS, and it sounds bad being an American, right? I'm such a sportsaholic that I often forget the MLS even exists. And also, though, I would say that we've probably seen not as many in the last 2 years, not as many European stars go there. I could be wrong, but like there was a nice run of, you know, probably a couple European stars every year going to the MLS. You know, we had that big one when Pirlo and Lampard joined David Villa there. But what, we had Gerrard there. We had, you remember when Bastian Schweinsteiger went to Chicago or something like that? We had a nice run of it. And then I feel like it dried up for maybe a couple years. But yep, last night I see on Twitter that maybe Chiellini is interested by the MLS. So do you think an MLS team should take a chance on Mr. Chiellini?
Yeah, so first of all, you know, I always try to give you my biases up front. Anyone's listened to the pod for a long time knows how much I respect Chiellini, both as a player and especially as a man. You know, we support the Insuperable on this podcast. They do amazing charity work running calcio camps for kids with disabilities in Italy. Chiellini is at the forefront of that. So I'm very biased towards him. So it's interesting that you went listing all those older players that came to MLS. And I would say, aside from David Villa, most of them really were not successful. So I would totally get the reaction. And I did see the reaction on Twitter. It was like, oh, Chiellini's 38 years old, misses matches. Oh, these are exactly the type of signings MLS was trying to move away from. So I wouldn't fault you if that was your reaction. But I would point out to a few things. This time last year, Chiellini had yet to dominate at the Euro the way that he did. I thought he was absolutely sensational there. This season, yeah, he's missed time, but he has played 19 Serie A matches, and this was after playing in the Euro. So I do think there's definitely a little bit left in the tank. When he plays, he's still one of the best defenders in the world, like without a doubt. It's not like when Pirlo played at his age, yeah, you'd have one flash, he'd have like a pass or two that you're like, oh, I remember why Pirlo was so great. Chiellini is not like that. When he plays at the highest level against the toughest opponents, he's still as good as really almost anyone in the world at his position. Recently played great against Inter. In addition to that, I would add to everything that he'd bring to the culture of a club and in the locker room. It's not a coincidence that after every really bad Juve loss, every time there's a really bad moment in Juve, who goes out to talk to the media? It's Chiellini. So I think an MLS team would hit an absolute home run signing Chiellini on the pitch, off the pitch. Again, I do get the criticisms, but again, I would tell you that this time last year, we had yet to see what Chiellini did at the Euro, and this season when he plays, he's still one of the very best in the world. So I'm rooting for it to happen. I think any MLS team would really benefit by having Giorgio in their locker room, and I do think he has still quite a bit to give on the pitch.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you say there. When he's on the pitch, I mean, it's not like you're seeing this washed-up defender for sure. So availability is important, but it's a lot worse when the availability is spotty and then also the performances are spotty. So I would like to see it, to be perfectly honest. All right. So, David, now looking ahead not to Chiellini in the MLS, but looking ahead to this weekend in Serie A. Always fun when you and Thousand join together. Well, not really join together, but at least make picks about some of the games this upcoming weekend. So who you guys picking?
Yeah, we have some really good ones this week. So I'm going to save the Inter-Roma game last. So 1,000 chose three games. I'm going to start with Sassuolo hosting Juve. He has Sassuolo winning 2-1. Two goals by Scamacca, goal by De Ligt. He says the true bomber striker is going to humiliate Vlahovic. He says Dionisi is going to have a masterpiece by canceling Cuadrado on the pitch. And he says Szczesny is going to have a disastrous match. In Italian, Sassuolo Juve 2-1, Scamacca doppietta De Ligt, il bomber umilia Vlahovic, capolavoro di Dionisi che cancella Cuadrado dal campo, Szczesny disastroso. First off, I want to quick comment on the pod. For a few years, I've been saying that Cuadrado is the most underrated Juve player of the past few years, and he deserves a lot more respect than that. I'm going to take it a step further. I think over the past four seasons, when I look at this stretch, and counting all the seasons, I don't think there's been a better player on Juve than Cuadrado if you look at the whole thing. Sure, Ronaldo had a great season. Dybala had an MVP season. There's been some standouts here and there. But for me, over the course of those 4 years, Cuadrado's been the best player on Juve. And in a way, I think that also says something about Juve, because I'm a huge Cuadrado guy, but you know, I think that also says about the state of the club. So I digress there. Back to the game. Sassuolo, there is this theory that Sassuolo saved their best games for when they go against the top teams, because then they're going to sell their players for more money. I love this conspiracy theory. Maybe there's something to that. So I'll tell you what, I'm not going to go as far as 1,000 names saying that Sassuolo going to win. I'm going to go 1-1. I'm going to give a goal to Raspadori, who did say in an interview he wants to go to Juve, and I'll give a goal to Vlahovic. Let's go to Lazio-Milan. Big match. I plan on going to Ducali to hang out with the Milan Boston fan club. Always a good time there in the North End. 1,000 names has Lazio winning 1-0, goal by Immobile. And he says Sarri is finally going to be a protagonist in a Scudetto race. I guess here he's saying by taking Milan out. He says that his Lazio is not fun to watch, but they do great against Pioli. He used to manage Lazio. And he says Ciro Immobile deserves respect. And he says Brahim Diaz and Messias are really terrible players. In Italian, Lazio Milan 1-0, Immobile. Sarri finalmente protagonista di una corsa scudetto. La sua Lazio fa pena, ma contro Pioli si esalta. Ciro merita rispetto, Diaz e Messias scarsissimi. I don't think Lazio win, but I don't think Milan lose either. I'm going to go 1-1. I'm going to give a goal to Milinkovic-Savic and give a goal to Giroud. But I do think Milan are, this Scudetto race is going to start slipping away from them. I'm going to add to the comment that I've had every time I tweet about the four strikers, I do get some pushback from Lazio fans saying Mobile deserves to be in this conversation. I would say that the main reason he's not is because of his age. And also, I think like, people have made up their mind on Immobile one way or another. Fair or unfair, I think people just rate him the way they do. So I'm going to go 1-1. I'm going to give a goal to Milinkovic-Savic. Actually, I take it back in Giroud. By the way, those Milinkovic-Savic Fulham rumors are really something, to say the least. Final match, but not least, the most important one. Mourinho returns to San Siro to face Inter. 1,000 has Inter winning 3-2, goals by Gosens, Çalhanoğlu, Dumfries, Tammy, and Pellegrini. The prediction is Pellegrini is Rui Patricio is going to save two penalties by Lautaro. Perisic is going to get a red card. He says Mourinho's streak of undefeated games ends, but he maintains his dignity. There's going to be big hugs with former Inter president Moratti and a dinner at the end of the match, and he says Simone Inzaghi is going to thank and run out the back door. In Italian, Inter-Roma 3-2, Gosens, Çalhanoğlu, Dumfries, Abrams, Pellegrini, Rui Patricio para due rigori a Lautaro Martinez, espulso Perisic, Mourinho perde l'imbattibilità ma non la dignità, grande abbracci con Moratti e cena a fine partita, limone in grazia e scappa. I'm tempted to pick Inter because I'm going to stick by my prediction that they're going to win the Scudetto and that it's not going to come down to the last match day. But Roma really have impressed me. I don't want to count them out. I'm going to say Inter take the lead with Lautaro, but Roma in typical fashion they've had this season with a goal by Zaniolo tie it in the second half. So those are our predictions. As always, thank you so much, 1,000 Names. Great to have you as part of the show. So now let's get to our first interview. I wanted we've been pretty Inter-centric recently in interviews, so I wanted to get some Milan perspective. We always love talking with our dear friend Daniele Mazzanti from Box to Box. So hope you enjoy the interview.
So I'm very excited to welcome our next guest, one of my favorites on the show, my good friend Daniele Mazzanti, the first guy we ever got to, from Vox to Box on the pod. We were catching up before the show. He told me he's been working a ton, but that he wants to go back to living the Italian dream, not the American dream, which gave me a good laugh. So with Daniele, we usually talk Milan, which we will do today, but we've been kind of looking at things too through the prism of the Scudetto race. So you're going to hear some of the same questions I asked Fulvio Santucci, and we're going to get Daniele's perspective on. So my dear friend, always a real pleasure to have you on. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Oh, David, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's always a honor for me to be a guest, and thank you. Thank you.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you. So listen, I know you're a pretty realistic Milan fan, but let's be fair, a few weeks ago, it did feel like maybe the tide was turning towards Milan. You know, Inter had a really brutal stretch in February. They were dropping points. So I want to ask you this. A, how confident are you that Milan can pull off winning the Scudetto? But I'm also curious to see how much your impression changed based on the game against Torino. I know it was the Coppa Italia against Inter with that. So did that change your mind a lot? And in general, how confident are you that Milan can pull this off?
So I'm not so confident because basically, it's true that Inter is a better team than AC Milan. They are stronger than us. They are more ready to fight in this time of the season. Like their team already won. Our team is pretty young and with not so much experience of fighting for a title. And talking about your question about Inter game, the Coppa Italia game and Torino game, I was not so surprised. And I did not change my mind about the Scudetto race because it's fair to expect a draw with this Torino, like every single team in the top of the Serie A. Struggle against this Torino because it's like the best team to make you play the worst. So it's those are not 2 points that AC Milan throw away like those we throw away with against Bologna. Yeah. After that game, I was devastated about the result because. Those were 2 points that AC Milan lost and should have earned in order to win this title. And I know that if we look at the remaining games, AC Milan had to face like the best the top part of the Serie A, like every single team from. Sixth to, I think, 10th position in the classifica in the Serie A.
But, standings, yeah.
Yeah, in the standings, sorry.
We're pro-Italian words on the pod. So.
No, but I'm so devastated about, like, this title is so tough that I forgot my English. It's, you know, it's terrible, but in this case, it's even worse. And, but looking at these games is not a big problem because AC Milan had this season biggest problem against the we say the little club. So the
Provinciale, the teams that defend, yeah, absolutely.
Yes, and if you see like the only. Two games that AC Milan lost against the top level club in Serie A in the first part of the season were against Napoli, and that was a very strange game with like 10 or more injured players for both teams. And we lost 0-1, 0-1 at home. And then that crazy game against Fiorentina, when we played without Magnana and without Kier, with Gabbia that made some terrible mistakes, etc. So I'm talking about the games that we have to play. I'm not so worried. My only concern, and this is a big concern, is about Inter, because they found that confidence that could allow them to win every single game till the remaining part of the season, till the end. So that is the problem, because, of course, if Inter will do 6 wins in the 6 games that they have to play, so chapeau, hats off, they deserve to win. And I'm worried about that, because like if they lose in Torino against Juventus, probably right now they won't be at 2-point distance from AC Milan, because that was a sort of turn of their season. And for me, this is a pretty strange thing, because as said, they are so experienced, like they have so much experience, they are ready to win another title. And I don't know why, but they are so they lost a lot of confidence in February, and right now they have again a lot of confidence. They are so strange. It's strange for a team like they are to be so I'd say emotivo. I don't know if it's emotional or emotive.
Emotional, that's a good word for it.
And that's the problem for us AC Milan fans. The problem is, of course, Inter and their form at the moment. The only thing that I think they could stop them is Roma.
Yeah, no, very interesting. And I'm with you. I thought that a win against Juve for Inter, if they do win the Scudetto, and I think that's what's going to happen, that will be what we remember. And I agree with you, the Bologna dropping points against them for Milan was more painful than Torino. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more of the Scudetto race. So I want to ask you this. Let's say Inter wins the Scudetto. Between Napoli and Milan, who do you think is going to end up having more regrets over this season?
Well, the pretty strange thing is that AC Milan and Napoli are on a similar path, I'd say, because both teams suffered a lot of injuries this season, so they have regrets in that way. They did not buy big names on January, so maybe to try to fix their I don't know, offense or defense or stuff like that, and so maybe they could have also regret about doing zero transfer market in January, basically zero or stuff like that. And I think probably AC Milan for two simple reasons. The first one is that we stayed on the first position for a lot of times, for a lot of games, etc., etc. And the second one is that for us Milanisti is very painful to see Inter fans win another title. Like a lot more than from a Napolitan perspective, I'd say. So it's probably answering, I'd say Milan. Probably is Milan, yes.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm sure you'd rather see Napoli fans celebrate for sure. So, you know, what's interesting about this Scudetto race, and maybe Napoli are out of it now is we have three managers that had never won the Scudetto before. And the only ones in the league that have are Allegri and Mourinho, and they're not in the race. But looking at the Scudetto race, who do you trust more between Pioli, Inzaghi, and Spalletti to lead a team down the stretch?
This is a very tough question. So Pioli, a good point for Pioli is that he's over there like since 2 years and a half. So probably he knows better his team, like his guys, his players, you know, better. He knows better. And talking about the past, Simone Inzaghi won some Italy Cup or stuff like that, and Pioli no. And Spalletti from my point of view is a great trainer, is a great coach, but he already lost some title races. And Pioli and Simone Inzaghi, if I remember well, they were not involved in any title race before. So it's really, I don't know. I want to say Pioli, but it's more a hope. I really don't know. It's
yeah, I would say I think Pioli is the one that's gotten the most out of his team. I think it's undeniable because I'm with you. I think Inter to me are a superior team to Milan. I think Napoli have more talent, but Pioli's gotten the most out of it. And I kind of tried. I think a case could be made that Inzaghi is the one because he really didn't have that many injuries, too many issues. So it's an interesting question. I don't think Pioli is wrong to say Pioli. In this case, I want to ask you about your boy Kalulu. You've been a huge fan of him. I love the picture where you had him as the Roi Soleil. And that really cracked me up. So he's been fantastic. And look, a lot of people in January wanted Milan to go out and get a center back with the injury to Kier, and he's been superb. So we're going to get to the new owners in a second, but I just want to ask you in a vacuum, because Milan have been linked to Botman for a while, and there's a lot of great things about Botman, but does the way Kalulu has played change your mind on how important Botman even is for Milan?
No, it didn't, because Botman and Kalulu are two very different players. Like Botman, he could be like very important for AC Milan because he's a sort of defensive regista. He knows how to beginning the plays, the action. So it's even more better than Fick, than Tomori about this fundamental. So I'd say Botman for us is very important, and I don't think that the born of the star of Le Roi Soleil Kalulu could be a good reason to not spend that money on Botman. Also because I remember well, they asked you to Pioli a few months ago which position could be the best for Kalulu, and he replied that the right defender in a three-man defense. But of course, we play with a line of four, not a line of three. But I'm guessing that in next year, if AC Milan will buy Botman, we could see a three-line defense. Also because we can do a sort of fake three-line defense, because if you start with Kalulu on the right and Theo Hernandez on the left, basically this is a three-line defense. So with, of course, Botman and Fikayo Tomori. And I'd say that would be amazing. Also because you can let Theo be more free to destroy the opponent's line. So that could be a good plan for... Like a good plan B for the next season.
I love that that three defense. That's a good, I never thought of it in those terms. Well played there, Daniele. Before we close on which of the young strikers in Italy you'd like hypothetically to have at Milan, I want to ask you this, because we've had for a few days these reports of the potential new owners for Milan, a fund from the Middle East. What was your reaction when you first heard the news?
My first reaction is I do not believe anything until I see ink on papers. Like my story with every single rumor football related is that I wait because I do not trust anyone in the world. I trust only my eyes. So at the beginning I was like, yeah, well, who knows? Let's see. That could be amazing. I don't know. Then I saw the tweets from the Bahrain UK embassy, and they say, gosh, I think probably this is serious. And of course, if we have this kind of rumor, that means that they are in the very final talks and the deal is basically done. Because it's impossible to think that we have this rumor and the deal it's on a first stage or initial talks, etc. So I think it's basically done, and that would be nice for AC Milan because of course this Invest Corp is another edge fund, but it's different. It's not a fund like Elliott because it's a closed fund. So basically, it's a sort of tool from Bahrain investors. And that could mean, well, we are rich. I don't know. Let's see. I really love how Elliott managed AC Milan in the last years.
They did an amazing job.
And my only hope is that they keep on this path with these people on board.
I cannot imagine Maldini, Massara have been great for sure.
I cannot imagine a sort of revolution with new people, with new persons, etc., because this board deserve to work in even better circumstances. I really don't know what Maldini and Massara could do with a huge budget. And I really hope to see it because that would be amazing.
Yeah,
if they can bring to me Rafael Leao and Theo Hernandez for 45 million euro in total, I don't know if they can spend 45 million on a single player, what they will do. It's amazing to hope about it.
I totally agree with you. And you and I joke around on Twitter on Mirabelli now that he's at my Padova. But, you know, it's like if, say, Milan brought in like a famous sporting director like Leonardo, to me, Leonardo did almost more damages to Milan than Mirabelli did. He had some horrible deals. So I totally am with you. They need, no matter what happens with the new owners, they need to bring back Galzidis, Maldini, Massara for sure. So, Daniele, as always, great job. Anyone who enjoyed this interview, by all means, check out Vox to Box. They are awesome. But I want to ask you this. I'm going to ask you this question. Today on the pod, we were talking a lot about the four young strikers in Serie A. I know we've talked about Vlahovic before. I know you're a big fan, although now he has the Allegri, you know, strategy maybe impacting him. You had Lautaro just score on your beloved Milan in the derby. You have Tammy Abraham, who maybe is your big hope for Milan winning the Scudetto if he can score against Inter. And then, of course, we have Osimhen, who is fantastic. So if you could have just one of these on Milan, based on what you saw so far this season and in general, who would it be and why?
So as you said, I'm a full Dusan Vlahovic lover. So my answer would be Dusan Vlahovic. And the main reason is that he's able to do basically everything. He's able to play alone with another player at his side, etc. And it's a pity to see him in a such disruptive, I'd say, tactics, but the coach of Juventus hate to talk about tactics. For him, the game is simple as that. But yes, it's a pity because he's amazing. He can do basically everything, and I really don't know what could have been Dusan Vlahovic with Theo Hernandez and Rafa Leao on the left, ready to let him score basically whatever he wants. And so my answer is Dusan Vlahovic. And of course, I really appreciate every single other player you mentioned, because of course they are great strikers, and I think that Victor Osimhen, he could improve a lot.
Yeah, I agree.
A lot. I think for him, I totally agree. The sky is amazing. Like we saw, like he's talking about percentile. He's like at 60% of his full potential, from my point of view.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he has the highest ceiling of all of them.
Yes.
I think he could literally win a Ballon d'Or someday if he reaches his potential. I'm not sure the others can. They're all fantastic. But Daniele, I can't thank you enough. As always, really enjoyed having you on. You've done a superb job as one of our core Milan guests. So keep up the great work. The growth at Vox2Box is amazing. You guys
thank you very much.
So many awesome podcasts. So thank you so much for coming on, my friend, and I look forward to chatting culture with you again, and I hope you get to live the Italian dream.
me too. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's always such a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Okay, always a great pleasure to chat with Daniele. Before we get to Sir Rudy on Roma, we're going to do a part of the pod for our patrons. If you enjoy listening to the show on Friday, consider becoming a patron. I do a solo show on Tuesday, breaking down what happened over the Serie A weekend, answer questions, try to keep it pretty fun. That's usually a 25-minute podcast on Tuesdays. We also have excellent articles. I'm going to write a piece this weekend. We have Enrico Passarella with some really great articles as well. And you get to ask us questions and join an excellent community of patrons. As I mentioned at the top, too, all the proceeds that we have of the podcast go to the Insuperabili, really a great organization in Italy. So I'm very excited to welcome the next guest. In Italy, there's a saying, dalle stelle alle stalle, which means going from the stars to the barn and, you know, where there's animals sleeping, like the extreme. Steve was actually recording with my idol, Bill Simmons, right before he hopped on. So those who have listened to Calcioland for a while, remember Steve Cerruti. We've had him on many times in the past. He used to be on Ryan Rosillo's podcast. Now he's on The Ringer. You hear it on Rosillo's podcast, Bill Simmons' pod. He's been doing a great, great job. So the reason I wanted to have Steve on today, he's a big Roma fan, but he also follows the PL. So he has a really good perspective on Mourinho and Tammy Abraham. So today we want to congratulate both of them on a great season, and I figured Steve could give us a great perspective. So, my dear friend, always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Incredible open, David. I always appreciate coming on with you. And yeah, I mean, it's exciting times. It was like a weird lull in there for Roma fans for a little bit, but things seem to be on the uptick. And a lot of those Jose haters are very quiet on Twitter these days.
For sure. And this is why I really wanted to have you on. So we're going to get to Mourinho in a second, but I want to ask you, and this is what I've been asking our guests on their team as we wind down the season. If you had to pick one word to describe Roma's season so far, what would it be and why?
Thought about this for a little bit when you sent me over the questions, David, and I settled on, I mean, it's kind of like a basic word, and it I don't know if it's the best summation of the season, but for me, at least, it works best, and that's purpose. It just kind of felt like for a few years that they were this rudderless ship, and the post-Monchi years were a mess. And they're still kind of financially recovering from that, which seems like it's one of those things that'll never actually go away. But this is the first season where you can see that they're building towards something. You can see that there are players put in the right positions, and there are opportunities for like the youth team and guys, younger players to grow into roles. You know, guys like Lorenzo Pellegrini have really taken the next step forward. They obviously bring in Tammy Abraham, who's had a great season. And it just feels like they're actually building something for the first time in a couple of years. You know, I remember the last time when I'm with you, David, I was always a Fonseca believer. I thought he's a good coach. I still think he's a good coach. I'm surprised he doesn't have a job. I know he's been rumored for different things, but I don't think he actually got a fair shake at Roma. They had the ownership change. You know, I don't think he ever got the right personnel or the players that he really wanted in there. I think he did a pretty good job, all things considered. But this does feel like for the first time in at least a few years that everyone is at least rowing in the same direction. We're not treading water anymore. There's a clear message from ownership on down to the sporting director, on down to Jose. And everyone seems to be doing the same thing and wanting the same thing and talking about this plan. So, you know, obviously I'd love to finish top four this year. I don't think they're going to do that. We can get into that a little bit later. But I finally feel like there's a purpose, David, to what this direction or what this club is trying to build to.
Yeah, you know, I never have a problem admitting when I'm wrong or when I change opinions. And I think what you said about there seeming to really be a plan and how it fits in, I think there's a lot to that. Because I'm not going to lie to you, I thought for a while this whole thing on Mourinho has 3 years, so this season doesn't matter that much. I thought it was kind of a cop out. I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. Then you look at his track record long term. But I think there is so much to what you're saying. Like, Roma really does have an identity now and is rowing in the right direction. So let me ask you this, because you follow the Premier League closely too. I know you're an Everton fan, but you watch it pretty closely. So you saw Mourinho at Man United, you saw him at Spurs. Has he exceeded your expectations at Roma based on what you saw with him in the Premier League at the end?
I don't think exceeded, I think, is a bit strong. Like, I think if they were to finish top four, I think that would probably exceed my expectations. I think this is probably where I thought they would be. I guess from a table perspective, no, but from just an overall vibe perspective, I think maybe this is what the reason that I backed the club and I was very supportive of them bringing him in, even though there were a lot of Premier League fans who always love to have their opinions about everything. Basically hating on this, saying he was finished and he was washed. And I did believe, do I think Jose is a top 10 manager in the world? I mean, probably not. Do I think his tactics are outdated? No, I think he plays a certain style. And I think the longer that we've gone away from his tenure at Man United and then to some extent his tenure at Spurs, you actually realize that he probably wasn't the problem in either of those places. You know, look at Man United now. I mean, they're obviously a disaster. I mean, this season can't end soon enough for them. And back then when he said that, you know, finishing second a few years ago and winning the Europa League were two of his biggest accomplishments ever in his career. You're like, oh, here's Jose again, just, you know, propping himself up, trying to make himself look good. But I mean, that's the last trophy that United won. That's, I think, the highest that United have finished since he left. So, you know, I think a lot of the things that he said that people laughed at him about have been proven to be true. Now, as it pertains to Roma, I just think the one thing that he needed to do and the one thing that Roma needed him to do and why I thought he was the right man for the job, even though he's older in age, is it wasn't about tactics. It wasn't about even players. It was about just the way that the club and the way that the team played and their confidence. And, you know, Roma have been historically just kind of they come up short. Let's be honest, David, they'll, you know, title, whether what, you know, it's finishing second multiple years behind Juventus. Now, those are some great Juventus teams. But even just not winning a trophy. year and bringing in some decent players and turning it around. It's really just changing the culture and the direction of the club. And that's why from day one, I've been like, I just think let Jose get in, let him bring the guys that he believes in, the players that he trusts, let him build his own project. And I think you'll be able to find something special. And I do think Serie A probably fits him a little bit better. I mean, who wouldn't want to live in Rome these days for him specifically or later in life? So expectation wise, like, I think it's probably right on par, but I think he did the job that I thought he was going to do, which is kind of straighten out some of these players and figure out who needs to go and who needs to stay. And he's elevated guys like Pellegrini and obviously Tammy and different guys. So, you know, I think it's probably right on where I expected, but I still think it's really where I think they should be going.
I completely agree on table wise. This is kind of where they are supposed to be, but how they are doing it, I think does speak to something potentially special being built. So let's talk a little bit more about that. I'm with you. I like Fonseca. I thought he did a lot of things well. It wasn't easy for him, you know, being there with the sporting director Petracchi, who left, ownership changes. I think you're completely right. He didn't get a fair shake. But this Roma is resilient. We've seen how well they play at the end of games. I think they are athletically maybe as good as any team in Serie A right now. So what stands out to you on the difference between what you've seen at Roma the past two seasons before and what you've seen now with Mourinho?
It's the mentality. It really is. Like, in the past, if Roma gave up an early goal, I had almost zero confidence that they would come back and win a game, let alone get a point out of something, no matter who they were playing. Now I feel like they go down and, you know, there's still like a crazy fight in this team. I mean, even like a perfect example would be the Bodo Glimt game where, you know, they dominated sort of the first leg and they ended up losing 2-1 on two deflection goals. And they very easily, like, the old Roma of the past, and this isn't even like an anti-Fonseca thing. I just think it was like, they just needed somebody to kind of like instill some confidence in them. And that's what Jose has done. So an old Roma team, I don't know if they come back to the Olympico and win 4-0 the way that they did so convincingly in that second leg in the Conference League. You know, they got blasted 6-2 at Old Trafford against like a pretty meh United team. And yeah, they played well in the return leg, but there was really nothing at stake. They weren't coming back. Whereas Jose, after that 2-1 loss, is like, no, we are the better team. We're going to go home. We're going to win. And that's what the team literally went out and did that. They did what their manager said. He is, you know, because earlier in the season, especially after the 6-1 loss to this very same team, you know, he called out a lot of the players and a lot of those guys that really haven't come back into the fold and will probably be leaving this summer, but rightfully so. But I think that was sort of a turning point in that, like, he's not messing around. Like, he knows what he's doing. And if you don't fall in line and you don't have this swagger and this confidence about your game and really believe that, you know, you can overcome whatever sort of situation is in front of you, then he doesn't want you in the building. And I think it's really helped, you know, guys like Kumbula has he was a part of that 6-1 debacle, was in the doghouse for a while and has come back and played really well. I think specifically he has elevated Pellegrini's game to the point where he is one of the best players in Serie A. I think he's one of the best midfielders in Italy. I think creatively, they're a completely different team without him. His free kick against Lazio was a contender for goal of the season. And, you know, he's really sort of like taken ownership of the captaincy. I don't know if that happens without Mourinho. So I think you go down the line, and that's why this summer is going to be so big, is because I think you're going to probably see a lot of the, you know, just the people that need to be weeded out, the people that need to go, and it'll completely kind of turn into really Jose's project. And that's where I think you'll see kind of the Jose year two bump.
Yeah. I hope people feel like we gave Mourinho his due. There is a section of Twitter that no matter what you say about Mourinho are going to find things to say. We haven't been fair, but the intent was to absolutely congratulate. I want to reiterate that he proved me wrong. And even not that long ago, I was talking to the guy that handles his PR and we were going back and forth on it. And Mourinho, I've come around. I think everything you've said, I totally agree with. So now let's talk about Tammy. And I have to tell you, I'm a huge fan of his. I went to a Chelsea game with Marcotti a few years ago, got to see him in person. I was blown away by what he did. He didn't score in that game, but I left that game saying that guy really has something. You followed him in the Premier League because you follow Everton and the league as a whole. So how impressed are you with what he's done? Did you imagine that he would have quite the impact he's had in a new league for him?
No, I didn't think it would be to the level that we've seen in year one. Like, I was fully on board with the transfer and the fee. I know 40 million is a lot, especially for a club like Roma. And if you look at, you know, some of their highest and their biggest transfers ever, like, comps. So I think I understand why people were worried. I wasn't. For me, it was Mourinho wants this guy, back Mourinho and give and go basically go out and get his guys. And he's young enough where my thing too, David, was always, even if he did somewhat flop or like didn't kill it, there's going to be plenty of teams that are mid-table EPL teams that would gladly take him back. And you'd probably recoup most of that money anyway. I thought it was all upside for the deal. And I think in year one, for him to, you know, score this many goals and to be this, it's not even the goals, David, and like how big that is. Cause you know, Dzeko later in his sort of Roma tenure, you could tell like he just, I don't know if it's, there wasn't like a fire inside him anymore. I think he kind of wanted to move on. I think he knew that the team wasn't probably up to his standards necessarily. I think that's why you've seen sort of a revival at Inter. But Tammy injected just this new life and energy into the attack that otherwise would not have been there with it and Dzeko. And, you know, I look at it now, David, and I go, the $80 million buyback clause, like that might be
a bargain.
I think there are multiple clubs that might pay that. Like, I don't, like Chelsea, if Chelsea don't pay it, would Arsenal pay it? Would whoever pay it? Now, question is he, you know, how much does he love being there? I don't think he's in a rush to leave. You know, if I was him, I wouldn't either. I would definitely stay, you know, at least another 1 to 2 years and then see what my options are. But I love this guy. And then the coolest thing about Tammy too, David, is that he immediately became a fan favorite because of, not only just because of the goals, but because he works his ass off. He's constantly hustling. He's incredible, basically leading a line. And the crazy thing too, is that, you know, he could honestly be more clinical in front of goal. Like I've been impressed with his build up play. I didn't know it would be up to the level that it is. I'm impressed with his dribbling. But he could even be more clinical in front of goal and probably be better next year. I think he's hit the woodwork more times than anybody in Europe. So there's even like another level that this guy can get to. And that's why, you know, again, I hope he stays for as long as possible because he's just such an enjoyable player to watch. And he's such a likable guy to root for. And the Roma fans absolutely love him. So to answer your question, like, I think, you know, I'm incredibly, incredibly impressed, even though I already had high standards for him coming in.
Yeah, you're right. And he was very unlucky to start the season. I think a lot of the woodwork he hit was at the beginning, and he's been fantastic. And I think what you said about Dzeko is so true. I think Tammy is an upgrade from the version of Dzeko last year and definitely what you would have gotten this season from Dzeko. So right now, you know, it is a golden age for young strikers in Serie A now. Tammy, you know, we've been doing this comp on these four for quite some time on the pod. We started last fall. And I have to say, you know, I put Tammy on the list more because of the potential and all, but he absolutely belongs now with the other three. So I'm going to ask you this. If you could in the summer swap Tammy for either Osimhen, Vlahovic, or Lautaro, which ones would you do the swap for?
The only one that I would absolutely swap for is Vlahovic. I think he's just on a different level, David. I think he's just an all-around player. And, you know, I think he's going to be the best striker in Italy for a long time, or as long as he wants to stay at Juventus. I mean, he could move on to bigger and better things. Like I'm so high on him. Like, I kind of think he's like Haaland light. I think he's almost closer to that level than he is, you know, your Osimhen's, your Lautaro's, your Tammy's. So he's the guy he's the only sure definite that I would take over Tammy. As for the rest of the guys, I think Lautaro, you know, if you gave me 2 years ago or last year's Lautaro Martinez, I might say him, but this year has been incredibly disappointing. And, you know, I think missing Lukaku has been obviously a bummer for them. I think Dzeko has replaced him pretty well, but I think Lautaro, I don't know if there was a chemistry thing with him that just worked better or something, or he just isn't the same guy. And I kind of wonder if he is also the guy to solo lead a line. Like if he could be the lone striker in a system, like the other three guys that I know can. So I guess it depends on what Lautaro I'm getting. So I think I would actually kind of lean Tammy on that one. And then when it comes to Osimhen, I think they're very similar players. I don't think they have similar play styles, but I think their level is pretty much the same. So just because I'm a Roma fan, I'll break the tie. I'll take Tammy. So the only one I would definitely take is Vlahovic.
You know, I love Osimhen. My prediction going into the year is that at the end of the season, he would be the most expensive Serie A player on the transfer market. And maybe he is, but I can't believe how close Tammy has become for me, too. And like Tammy's been clutch in some huge games, too. So listen, it's interesting. On this pod, Vlahovic has gotten a lot of love from a lot of different guests. I know right now, since he's been at Juve, it's been a little bit uneven. uneven, but we've been pretty consistent, and it's not prepped. It's like every time I ask a guest, almost everyone brings him up first. So let's talk about two other offensive players. I have to say, you know, there were some concerns on Mkhitaryan and Mourinho because of their past at Man United. Maybe not the best start, but I think Mkhitaryan's been really pretty great in 2022. Zaniolo kind of the same for different reason with his health off-field issues. In your opinion, so far with the season almost over, who's been better between Mkhitaryan and Zaniolo?
I think it's Mkhitaryan. And to your point about like how he would sort of reunite with Jose, I think that was definitely an issue, but they kind of squashed that pretty early, and I was glad to see. And that's why, you know, I don't want to make this entirely about Jose again, but you know, all these narratives about him that, you know, he holds these grudges or he doesn't play young players have completely been, you know, basically ruined in this like less than 1 year with Roma, because Mkhitaryan, I think you could argue, is one of Roma's most important players. Now he's 33. I think he'll be out of contract this summer. So they'll probably figure out, I think he'll end up coming back on a short deal, because he is very important. He seems to like the city and they seem to be getting along well, but Roma are a more dangerous offensive team, period, with Mkhitaryan when he's in the lineup. And I think he is just more important than Zaniolo. And I think Zaniolo is still figuring out kind of you know what the good sign is though, for me, David, is that a lot of the Zaniolo stuff is decision-making and from the mental side of the game and not really the physical side of the game. So after all the injuries, we were concerned, would he have the same explosiveness? Would he have the same drive? Would he have the same explosion? And he really does. I mean, if anything, he's just like a more jacked version of what he was 2 years ago. And honestly, I made this comparison to my friends in the group chat, and they watch Serie A Cat more casually than I do. But I kind of think the Zaniolo thing, like I compare it to like Shaq in the early 2000s, when he was so big and strong that I don't think he's officiated properly. Like he can just get his ass kicked by defenders. And because he's so big and because he can take it, that the officials don't call fouls in situations. Yeah. And I think a lot of that happens with Zaniolo, where, you know, he'll get bumped off the ball. And because he's so big and strong and physical, that like he doesn't get the calls that some smaller, more slight players might get. So I think he's sort of still trying to figure that out. Like Zaniolo, you know, there's a screen grab from the game over the weekend where he could have very easily just laid it off to Pellegrini for probably a tap in goal, but he doesn't have his head up. So there's like things like that with Zaniolo. I think he still has to be more crisp on. So I'm still very probably the number two or three most important player for Roma's future. The question is, what position does he play? Like, I don't think he's a true. I don't have to be an attacking midfield. Jose's biggest challenge. What role works the best for Zaniolo going forward?
Yeah, maybe it sounds a little bit like Dybala. It's not the easiest to fit in. Yeah, but in a different way. And I think it's a very good observation on his body and how he's bulked up. And maybe now he's not officiated correctly. I think there's something to that. So, look, as you mentioned, Mourinho has really changed his perspective. Now Roma's known for an explosive attack, for the comebacks, the mentality. And, you know, look, in Italy especially, people associate defense and the great treble team he had at Inter. So tell me a little bit of the center backs on Roma. Which is the one that you trust the most?
It's Smalling by a mile. When Smalling is healthy, it's like he's the Mkhitaryan of the defense. He just, everything is much more calm. You know, the other three guys that they rotate in their back three, which are, you know, Banez, Mancini, and Kumbula, like they kind of fall in place and they know their roles, but it always is predicated on Smalling playing in the center of that back three. So for him, and I mean, he's the oldest of the three too, so he should kind of be that guy. When he's in there, they're a completely different team, and I feel very comfortable with them at the back. But the good thing about Roma's defenders, and that's interesting that they've kind of been rumored to be in the market for another center back this summer, but I actually kind of like their situation, because I think they have like the steady, sturdy veteran in Smalling who plays right in the middle. You've got Mancini, who's more of a fiery, like Roma leader, guy who's not afraid to get a card most of the time, not afraid to go in, you know, for a hard challenge, guy on the right. And then on the left, they kind of switch between Ibanez, who I think probably has the highest ceiling of all of them, but he's also the guy who's more prone to make mistakes and boneheaded errors, like we saw the penalty given over the weekend. And then Kumbula, I think, is the more like steady sort of like guy that they're still sort of trying to develop, and a guy that's come back into the fold under Mourinho. So I like all of them. They all bring different qualities to the table, but whenever Smalling is in there, by far, he is the most important piece of that three.
Yeah, he's been playing really well, and there were doubts if he was going to come back, and thank God he did. He's been really excellent for them. So aside from Kumbula, and I do agree with you, he's shown some flashes. I was a big fan of him at Verona. Which Roma players do you think are underrated right now?
You know what's funny, David? I think maybe the last time or the time before you had me on, you were asking me about like biggest surprises, and it'll be my same answer for who I think is underrated right now. And I think that's Rick Karsdorp.
I had a feeling you were going there. Yeah.
It's funny because there are like pockets of Roma Twitter that I think like want to replace him constantly. He's not the flashiest player ever. And I don't know if he's really truly a right back. He's probably more of a right mid, right wing back, although he has gotten better defensively. But when he's given time, he's an incredible crosser of the ball. His work rate is absolutely incredible. That's why I kind of find it funny. Like, I think it'll be good that they should probably, and I think they did this with Ashley Mate and Niles, although it hasn't really worked out, where they wanted to bring somebody else who can kind of give him a breather, but also maybe challenge him a little bit. I think they should probably do that in the summer, although I would do it probably more on the younger route of a different player. Maybe somebody like in their late teens, early 20s that they could develop, because I think Karsdorp is one of the best, you know, one of the better right back, right mid kind of guys in the league. And I mean, his cross to Tammy in the derby where, you know, basically, you know, it was a laser in the air that Tammy smashed in. I mean, he puts those balls in all the time. And, you know, I don't want to like throw Trent Alexander-Arnold's name on there because he's obviously in a completely different class, but he's kind of that type of player where you give him time that's relatively young too. And I think he's like one of the few, I mean, I guess you could point out, you know, the only years, but I do think he's in general who kind of want to replace him a lot. And then I think a close second, David, would be Brian Cristante, not because I think he's great, you're reading too much of fate, as you know, but I just think he's kind of underrated because of how much people think he stinks. You know, there's like an element to that in his game. He's asked to do so many different roles that do I think he's an incredible defensive midfielder? No. Do I think he's an incredible attacking midfielder? No. Do I think he's somebody you build your team around? No. But I think as you saw in the Euro and as you're seeing why Jose, you know, plays him all the time, basically now is because he's just a guy that you can kind of rely on. So those would be the two guys that come to mind.
Yeah, I love the Cristante shout out. I remember last Euro when I was watching him for Italy, I was like, this guy Mourinho's going to like right away at Roma. And that's a position that Roma definitely they're going to try to upgrade. So let's get to the last question. I think, look, no matter what happens rest of the way, I think year one of the Mourinho experience has to be a positive. I think it's undeniable. So we're going to go move into year two of the project next summer. What do you think Roma needs to do to get to the top four and maybe be an outside contender for the Scudetto?
I would buy three midfielders. I don't think they could buy enough. Now, I just you know, wax poetic about Cristante. Like, I think he's more of a squad player. I think he's a guy that can play a role, but I don't think he's somebody you build a team around. It's no secret Roma need a defensive midfielder. They've been rumored with just about every possible or available defensive midfielder in the world. Whether it's, you know, the guy from Marseille, I think it's Camara. I think then they've been rumored with Renato Martinez. They've been rumored with Nemanja Matic. They've been rumored with the defensive mid from Hoffenheim. Every single person who is on the market, they have been rumored for a defensive mid. I think they'll bring one in the summer. I think that'll be a huge addition to the team. I mean, I think that's kind of why, obviously, they wanted Xhaka in the summer, although I'm kind of happy they didn't end up paying for him because I just don't think it was worth it, no matter what Arsenal fans say. And so that's where I would start. And then I would honestly, I think a sort of a pressing need, or at least like you can play behind Mkhitaryan mold to become sort of the Mkhitaryan when he leaves, because he is 33 years old. And they've been rumored for a couple guys, the Valencia, I think it's Goncalo Guedes, who's an exciting young attacking player. And, you know, I think they'll maybe bring in a right wing back, as I mentioned before, to kind of like at least give Karsdorp a breather or somebody who's younger who can bring a little bit more energy. They tried to do that with Brian Reynolds, the American, and I was really hoping that would work out as a big fan of the U.S. men's national team, but it just has not. He's gone out on loan, so I assume they'll try to rectify that. And then the final thing, David, is, you know, the one thing in the Jose era that hasn't really worked out is the Eldor Shomurodov transfer. Now, I actually like him as a player. Like, I think he works hard, and I think he cares about, you know, he cares about the club, and I think he's done some nice things when he gets in there. But for whatever reason, he just doesn't get a ton of playing time, and he kind of is a second striker too. But I think there are just too many guys in front of him, or he doesn't have a clearly defined role. So if they end up getting rid of him, I think they should probably bring in another backup striker to kind of solidify, just in case, you know, there's any sort of Tammy things of not asking to play an entire season of like 50 plus games. So that's where I would do. But I think the midfield, if they really come in and they can buy a couple of really solid midfield players that can contribute right away, I think they're a top four team next year.
Fantastic enough. I'm sure some fringes of Mourinho Twitter will have something to say on this segment, but I think you did a great job on that. Steve's fantastic. It's really a pleasure to have you on. I was telling him I'm starstruck because I listen to all the pods that he's on. So if you want to hear Steve talking about NBA, American sports, life advice, some soccer, check him out on Bill Simmons, Ryan Rosillo podcast. It's very obvious to me why you're on those shows. So thank you so much for doing this, my friend, and I look forward to chatting culture with you again soon.
My pleasure, David. Anytime.